Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today we are recording episode 130, and I'm honored and I have the distinct pleasure to be joined by Joshua Hill. Joshua is joining me from Australia. We'll get to know Joshua in a second. But if you are new to the channel, if you are new to the podcast, I highly recommend that you subscribe so you don't miss other episodes or new episodes. And if you haven't done so already, check us out on all your podcasting platforms. I'm trying a new platform now that is publishing the podcast a little bit better. Again, encouraging to hear to see where all of our audience is coming from. It's truly a global audience. We've topped 49 countries past week where the audience are coming from. And I really appreciate you listening in and joining in the conversation. And I truly appreciate your compliments that comes in through LinkedIn and various other media. I really appreciate it. That means you're enjoying the content that I'm putting out there. Again, this channel is a personal initiative. It's not backed by anybody. I don't have an army of marketing people behind me. This is just me. I record during the week and I edit on the weekend. So if you're interested in becoming a guest on the channel, please feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn. And it's pretty straightforward, pretty easy. I'll send you the link. You register yourself for the podcast and off we go from there. Joshua, welcome to the channel. I really appreciate you being with me, and early for you in Australia, late for me in the afternoon here. So we have to make it work somehow. Thanks for being with me.
Yeah, I appreciate the warm welcome. And I'm looking forward to this chat actually quite a lot. And it's not early for me because we'll get into it.
You started earlier?
Yeah, I start earlier. I work for a US marketing agency. So I'm regularly up at this time. So
Australia is a big country. Where are you from in Australia?
So I was born in Sydney on the East Coast, and now I live in Adelaide. So I moved a bit all over the place with the military back in the day and settled in Adelaide because I met my partner here, and we've been here for 5 years now. But it's a nice part of Australia. It's a bit tucked away, a bit less well known. A lot of good wine, if you're into wine.
I love Australian wine. I'm a wine drinker.
Yeah, nice. Well, you would love, you'd know the Barossa wine region and McLaren Vale, and there's some really nice wine that comes out of South Australia. So I'm in heaven, to be honest,
because I'm also
a wine drinker.
So welcome again. I know, when I was reading your bio, it's quite interesting. I found it quite interesting. From military, from an army captain to HR. As we say on this channel, everybody's got a story. So why don't we start with this?
Yeah.
Tell us your story.
Of course. So when I was 18, I joined the military through the Defence Force Academy, which is based in Canberra, which is the capital of Australia. So I went there and studied business at the same time as doing military training, just similar to like West Point in the US or Sandhurst in the UK. It's an officer training kind of institution. So I was there for 3 years. Then I went to the military college, which is more of a focused infantry style officer academy. And then after that, I graduated and went to Queensland up north into Brisbane and was posted to an infantry unit. And then from there, over the next 6 to 7 years, I moved postings across Australia. And I studied a master's of HR randomly because I kind of had this feeling that I would end up in this space. And I didn't really take much away from that degree, honestly, because I think we'll get into it probably in this podcast, but universities at the moment, and particularly around the arts and business, I mean, you can get it from listening to podcasts and YouTube. So I didn't really get much from that degree, but it at least put me in a position where I was like, I find this space interesting. And I grew a bit tired of defense and military life, namely because of just the context, the same people, same problems. It just got to a point where I felt like the creativity and the innovation and this entrepreneurship that I wanted to flex, I couldn't. So I left the military and started working for this US company, this marketing agency, as a media buyer of all things, as a marketer. Was drawn to it by the ability to communicate and kind of influence human behavior and advocate for some really cool companies. And so I've basically been there since and have wound my way up into the leadership team doing the HR stuff. So I've kind of come back full circle. So that degree did come into use, relatively speaking, which is just funny. But, you know, I haven't looked back. And over the last couple of years, I've been very focused on looking and discovering how to fix some systemic problems that I see across HR and particularly hiring that we can get into. But the last few years of being in HR has made me realize the opportunity that exists to be so much more than just HR and really be an enabler of people providing value in organizations. Now with AI as well coming to the front, there's a lot of collision courses right now that exist with people and tools, technology, AI, how they interact. And where I'm most interested at the moment is with hiring, particularly, and how AI is influencing that, I believe, currently for the worse. And with that vision in mind, I've co-founded a company called SuperHired, which is really aimed at getting back to first principles with hiring. And yes, we leverage AI, but it's about how to augment and put a human in front of the hiring process to really make sure that the human is not lost in the art of matchmaking, which is what hiring should be, not what we're currently seeing, which is a broken process, which is a bit of an AI fest with lots of people not having a very good experience, put it that way, put it lightly.
So tell me, are you still part of Tier 11?
Yes. Yeah, I still work there full-time.
You do?
Yeah, so I'm Moonlight Super Hired at the moment.
So you're one of those, are you?
I'm one of those
at
the moment.
One job is not enough.
A bit of a vampire, to be honest. But look, it's great because there's a lot of mutually supporting activities, and a lot of stuff I learn in Tier 11 I'm bringing to SuperHired, a lot of stuff at SuperHired I'm bringing to Tier 11. And SuperHired at the moment is really this passion project that is growing legs and it's gaining momentum. And I think it just goes to show that when you inject the human back into hiring, people listen, people are interested, especially candidates, especially people that have had poor experiences when looking for a job, being treated like an input to a production process, like an asset, rather than, hey, I'm someone with unique capabilities here that needs just to have a conversation with a recruiter. And I can't even do that despite sending out thousands of resumes and playing this game that is just so broken. Meanwhile, companies are getting flooded with thousands of resumes that are AI generated, and their recruiters are like, I don't know how to deal with this. So it's a bit of a lose-lose right now.
So, yeah, I talk about this on the channel here quite often, the influence of AI on the hiring process. In fact, I've posted something not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago now, on LinkedIn, where I had this vision in my head where, you know, the candidate are using bots nowadays to enhance their image, their resumes, their skills, their, you know, keyword search, searchability, et cetera. So they're using a lot of those tech to do the work for them. And on the opposite side, the recruiters are doing pretty much the same. They're using text to filter that. And I was kind of using like a joke about it where, you know, here's the candidate and the recruiters are both doing bot-to-bot kind of conversation. And the recruiter and the candidates are just at Starbucks having fun. It just makes no sense to me. You know, I get it. You know, you need a lot of filtration tools, and those filtration tools are helpful sometimes, or it helps you analyze a little bit better. I get that. Again, a lot of times when we do the analysis, and you know, I've been a manager all my life, I've hired people all my life. My personal experience is when we hire people, you're relying on several factors, not just a resume. And a lot of times, if you filter them early at the beginning, you're missing out on a lot of talent, because sometimes people like say, well, you know, I didn't get the interview. Well, why didn't you get the interview? Well, because the system did not pick up the right keyword. And even though that the individual, if you sit down and talk to them, they have the right chemistry, they get along with everybody, they're skilled, etc. But you missed that conversation. I think that's what you're alluding to. And I did a podcast with E.A. Clark. I don't know if you've got a chance to catch it. That's exactly what we talked about, putting back human into the recruiting. And I know some of the recruiters are using heavily AI. I got criticized for it, right? Some of the recruiters came out to me and said, hang on a second, AI is really helpful. I like it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tool. Look, I'm not bashing AI. I never will.
I mean, it's a tool, but you got to use it logically, right?
I use AI so much, it's ridiculous. But I understand that it's a tool, and the way you wield a tool determines the value that you get from it. And if you apply AI on top of something that is already broken inherently, you're going to produce more shit inherently, right? If we look at hiring, and the fundamental process from first principles, take AI off the table, it's broken, right? And AI has just enabled us to move and shovel that stuff quicker, faster, more aggressively from both ends of the spectrum. So my philosophy with regards to this is that hiring at its bare roots should essentially be a matchmaking activity that's heavily contextualized. And what that means is when you have a person, a candidate, they are a human that has a particular set of jobs to be done and demands, expectations they want from their work, depending on the industry, where they're located, their skills, their experience, what they've been exposed to in a workplace, their interpretations of what they think they need versus what they actually need. Like, there's so much that goes into a candidate, not only themselves understanding what they want, but like facilitating that self-discovery of the candidate as part of a hiring process. So you have that one side of the candidate, which is highly dynamic and it changes throughout their life. What I want now is not going to be the same in 12 months. You also have the company, which a lot of the time don't truly understand what work product they're offering to these people. You know, I'll get clients that come up to me, or I've worked with agencies before, hiring agencies, and the surface level discovery of what it is you actually offer as a company determines how well you can communicate the job position and how well you can sell it and market it and bring someone in and screen for it. So a lot of the time companies are like, yeah, we just need, you know, a marketing manager. Okay. Any more information? No, that's enough. You should have enough. They just need to be from this country, marketing manager. Okay. But also, we're in this industry. It's like, dude, that's not enough information. Like, I want to sit down with you for 2 weeks and I want to understand what team are they going to be in? Who are they going to be working with? What dynamics are the team operating in? What are the social dynamics? What are the demands of the role right now? How are they likely to change? What are the values of your organization? Are you actually living those values? So the matchmaking process is fueled by data on both sides of the coin. So AI can be very helpful and very useful in unearthing that data through discovery, but it should only be leveraged to unearth that data and facilitate matchmaking, not being applied on top of a system where you're not doing that level of due diligence in determining what do I offer as a company and what does the candidate, the human in front of me, truly want? Are they even interested in this product? So that's what we're doing with SuperHired. It's like, you want to hire? Stop. Number one, do you even need to hire? Because hiring is a solution. It's not always the solution. You're just adding additional complexity if you bring a human into your organization. So do you actually want to do that? If you do, and we determine that that's the right move, number two, give us 2 weeks of us discovering your business, your needs, your desires, etc. Then after 2 weeks, we'll have everything that we need and we'll sell and market that position to the right people, just like you would an external product, right? To your external clients and customers. We take the same principles and you apply it inside the business. So that's this work as a product methodology that's taking a bit of momentum right now in the HR space and the people space is, why do we apply so much rigor, intensity, and passion to our external clients, but don't apply it to the biggest expense in a company, which is our people, which equates to 50-60+% of expenses? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So
when you mentioned that the HR system is broken, is that what you mean? Or are there other factors?
When I say the system is broken, look at the way and the means in which we facilitate that matchmaking right now. We have a resume we have that is created by a candidate that's laden with bias, that is heavily now influenced by AI and auto-generated. It's one-dimensional. It's lagging. It's not future-oriented. It also lacks context. So the skills and experience that are listed on a resume do not give me insight as to what was the context like in which you deployed those skills? What was the context like of that company? Like, we unearth this from, you should be unearthing these things if you're a good interviewer, naturally through conversation. But a lot of people don't. And a lot of people rely on your resume as a single source of truth. And a lot of ATS systems now screen using keywords that lacks context on resumes. Mm-hmm. So the resume was actually, fun fact, invented by, or not invented per se, but the first person to use one was Leonardo da Vinci back in like the 1500s or something, which is telling, right? If we're still using the same terminology from a document that was invented 500 years ago and, you know, came into its name state during the Industrial Revolution when work was stand here, do this, then that, right? Very straightforward. Work's not like that anymore. Work is complex. It's messy. It requires collaboration. It requires all these intangible things that are hard to measure. In a factory, if you're assembling a component of something, if I look at your resume and I see, oh, you assembled that component and you did that reliably, I can make a fairly accurate and safe assumption that you could assemble this other component over here. But if you tell me that you led this project that involved multiple stakeholders and this and that and all these different complexities, I need to understand what leadership was present, what context was influencing your ability to do that, what team did you work with? There's so many more things to unpack. And the way the system is set up is to not unearth those things. So the advocacy here is in order to improve the process and create a win-win when it comes to recruitment, AI is an important augmentation. But the first things first is principles that need to be re-engineered regarding making hiring a matchmaking endeavor rather than something that, you know, we're sprinting to a result, trying to chase speed, quantity metrics, time to fill metrics over quality, long-term fit, and a matching of someone's inherent drivers of what they want from work. Not just, oh, I want this amount of pay and I want to be in this industry. No, like socially, what do you want from work? Emotionally, what are you seeking from work? Functionally, what are you seeking from work? And we explore these dimensions with candidates. And that's the difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
It's difficult because it's multifaceted. So it's quite complex.
Absolutely. Especially when you're trying to dig into some questions that sometimes people are shy to answer, especially on the candidate side, right? So, right. You know, sometimes some questions are not comfortable too much for some people. Not everybody is the same, obviously. And they probably don't want to answer, which make it harder for you to get that the reality of things, to get that the truth and unearth the truth, as you were mentioning earlier.
Mm.
Now, for a business owner, we talked a little bit about the candidate. For the business owner, and I'm assuming you target like small to medium, large companies, it doesn't matter, right? I'm assuming across the board, or do you have a specific target?
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't, because principally it's all the same. We haven't
worked
with any
anyway,
super large. Right, exactly. Like, yeah. We haven't worked with enterprise level clients or customers yet. It's been small to medium sized companies.
So what is the, if you can articulate, you know, your pitch to them, what business problem does it solve? I get it, you know, get the right candidate in the right place, but it must have some other connotation.
Yeah, so I like to refer to this concept called talent density. It was coined by, I can't remember his name. I should really remember his name, but it's from Netflix. He was working at Netflix. I believe he was the head of people at Netflix, or even he was the chief operating officer for some time. But it's this North Star metric in an organization where you are looking to increase the density of talented people. And the idea being that when you increase the density of talent in an organization, you're able to provide a better, high quality, more sustainable, consistent level of service to the clients or to the product development. That is ultimately the end goal for the business, right? It's to service clients or a customer base with excellence, to be innovative, to understand their clients, etc. The way you do that is through people, until we're all eventually replaced with AI. That's a separate conversation. And when you are focused on increasing the density of talent, the second and third order effects are huge for the company's bottom line and for the customers. So when it comes to talent density and thinking of work as a product, your employees become your customers as a business. And you're forced to rethink about how you intentionally design work so that they're always oriented towards delivering the best service for your clients. And when a business owner has that in mind, then you start to make other fundamental decisions around how you hire them and how you design the work and how you remove obstacles and how you improve the experience of your internal customers, which are your employees. So the pitch to business owners is, if you're bringing in the right people, and when I say right, it's based on your context specifically as a business, but when you're bringing in those right people, and increasing the density of talent, you're inherently increasing the quality of service that you're giving to your clients. And it's a win-win, right? So bringing in hiring the right people is the easiest lever to increasing talent density. You know, a lot of people talk about performance management, ongoing training, leadership and mentoring, all these other things inside the business that are important for that employee customer journey to continue. That's very important stuff. But those people are all at some stage going through a hiring process to be onboarded into your company. And if you bring on the wrong person, it's detrimental to the culture, the social cohesion, the trust in leadership. Not only that, but it costs fiscally a lot of money to replace someone, like a poor hire, a poor hiring decision. Whereas a good hire is multiplicative. It raises the tide. It increases the ability of their surrounding team members. And that's, in a nutshell, this concept of talent density, really. And that's what the North Star of hiring should be centered on.
Reed Hastings, by the way, the name of Netflix.
Yes, Reed Hastings. Thank you.
So for those who are not yet familiar, and I've done this topic a couple of times, work as a product, and we've talked about it here. I've talked about it in other podcasts. And I still feel like there are some people can't wrap their head around it. If you were to explain it to them in plain language, what does that mean? It means, my understanding of it is, you're buying your time. So basically you're right, selling your time as an individual to somebody.
So the way I would explain it in simple terms is, and I can explain it through a simple analogy here. So, and we can continue on the Netflix train. So most of us have a Netflix account, right? We subscribe to Netflix because it does a job for us. And those jobs are entertainment. I want to be entertained after work. I want to have a place where I can veg out and not think about anything else. I want to have time where I can enjoy with my family, laughing. You know, like, everyone subscribes to Netflix for a different reason. It's a product. And you can apply this to anything, right? I don't buy a hammer because I just want a hammer to look at it. I buy a hammer for it to do a job for me, to nail a picture to the wall, right? To help me assemble things quicker. So work is the same thing. I hire my job or my work to do certain things for me. And that is completely different from person to person. Some people hire their job completely and utterly based on their unique situation for financial security and more like tangible means because of the nature of their life. Some people that are financially well off, and maybe as they get older in life or transition and build wealth, that starts to become less important potentially, and other emergent jobs start to appear about what they want from their work. So when we talk about work as a product, it's this idea that when you look at work and your relationship to work, it is something that you choose to subscribe to as a product. Think of it like a subscription product.
Yeah.
Your current workplace, you're subscribing to it because you're getting things from it. So when a company takes that approach, what it means is there's a realization and an understanding that everyone in your company is subscribing to your workplace for specific reasons that are all different and dynamic. And therefore, everyone is an individual customer, each with their own different jobs to be done from the work that you're providing. And those can be mapped across the jobs to be done dimensions: social, emotional, functional. That's a good framework by Clay Christensen, which is worth researching. It's very interesting. And when we start to design work that intentionally, you can start to unlock levels of discretionary effort from people. You can start to unlock a level of momentum and commitment from people when you start to provide them with the jobs that they're seeking to be done from work. And when you use it in a hiring process, you can start to identify, hey, candidate Joe, you've identified that, or with us through discovery, that these are your jobs to be done from work. This is the work product you want to subscribe to. This is the work product that I'm offering you right now. Let's compare them. I can see there's some good, strong connections here. We can offer you autonomy and a strong, fast-paced environment. However, you know, you've listed benefits and security up the very top. Unfortunately, we've only got 15 people on our team. We're a startup. You know, we're going to have to make some sacrifices here. It allows a conversation to be had throughout a hiring process, but also inside the business, that's tackling the root of what people want from work and creating awareness around discrepancies and strengths so there can be subsequent steps taken, or at least a mutual understanding of like, hey, I know you want this, but we just can't give this to you now. But I get you. I understand you. I see you. I hear you. Now's not the right time. And that, for a lot of people, that's enough.
That's right. Now, if you want to continue on with the product analogy, there are some good products and bad products.
Mm.
And the question comes in and says, well, how do I know which one is a good product, which one is a bad product? I guess it's an individual thing. But also when you're talking about, you know, I'm subscribing to a product, using Netflix analogy, the objective for Netflix is to keep me around because they want retention. They want to keep that customer around. Can we extend that analogy to an employment environment? Don't know, because a lot of theories around that. Some theories would say, you know, the fact that people stick around for a while, maybe they're, you know, they found a comfort zone or something. I have no idea. Or maybe they're good, but, you know, there are other factors in place. What is normal nowadays in a job? 5-year tenure? 3-year tenure? 20-year tenure? I don't know. You get where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is a really interesting segue, because a business typically is multi-sided. And what that means, it's not groundbreaking stuff, but it's interesting to break this apart, because Uber, for example, is a great example. They have the drivers, their employees, staff members that work in HQ. They've got the restaurants that they pick up from, Uber Eats. They've got the delivery. Yeah, so the delivery drivers, the people they deliver food to, all these stakeholders, right, that need to be balanced in terms of their needs and desires and how they interact with one another. It's quite complex. In a traditional business, usually you have the three sides. You've got, and let's use Netflix, you've got the staff, you've got the company, the shareholders, the founders, the owners, and then you've got the employees. Now, Netflix, if it applied its work as a product methodology to its employees, it would be designing specific experiences in the business to keep them subscribed to the work product. And the way it does that is through understanding what does Netflix offer as a culture, freedom, responsibility. They're quite deliberate with how they do things. It's very attractive. They're attracting a certain type of talent. They're keeping them in by maintaining that workplace. And because they're able to provide an excellent service, they're able to maintain a large customer base, which is us. We pay for the subscription. Okay, so in that paradigm, when we subscribe to Netflix, we're their customer, their proper external customer. We're not their internal customer. They would treat their internal customers different to their external customers because of the fact that in this multi-sided business model, you need all of them to operate together in tandem for the whole system to work. You need to treat your employees in a certain way, and you need to manage that product differently than you manage the product of your external clients. With your external clients, it's a different relationship. The value that you're getting in return is money for providing an excellent service. You're not getting money from your employee base. You're getting commitment, value, time, effort in exchange for the drivers of work that these people want. It's interesting to think about it that way and to break it down. But when we subscribe to Netflix, I guess the takeaway here is when we subscribe to Netflix as customers, it's not a directly applicable analogy because the relationship is different as compared to if I was a Netflix employee subscribing to the work product. It's a different exchange of value. But the principles are the same. How we sell, how we market, how we design, how we do discovery, how we deliver, all of these principles and frameworks that we use to provide a service and sell a service to our external clients and customers is something that we can definitely take and use as food for thought on how to design better employee experiences. And again, that's another reiteration, another way to look at this work as a product model.
Now, does the product work as a product model help HR manage employees better? And what I'm getting at is, do you detect, or does it at some point through the business cycle of employment of an individual detect, for instance, signals that this product is not working for me anymore as an employee? And how do you manage that? Is there like a downward benefit to the work as a product?
100%. So with the external clients and customers, I think a lot of people would be familiar with customer journeys, a customer journey or mapping a customer journey This is where they come in. They become a marketing qualified lead, sales qualified. They come in, client success team, if you have it, they onboard onto operations. And then you've got a whole life cycle of how we manage that client journey in the relationship and deliver value over time. The same is this, it's the same with the work product internally. So an employee comes in through your sales and marketing, which is your talent acquisition and hiring, your onboarding. They get bedded into the organization. And then as they're subscribed, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, however long the tenure is, the whole time you can be applying these product management principles to your customer, internal customers, your employees. And similarly to what you do with an external client, you should be doing continuous discovery with your employees on an individual basis, putting in effort to understand how is their expectation of work and what they want from work shifting? Are they enabled to do the job that they're there to do? What's inhibiting them? What are their pain points, their needs, their desires? And what are the gaps that exist when it comes to the trajectory of the business, where the business is moving, where the person's moving personally? And it's a listening exercise. And I think a lot of that rests on the responsibility of leaders at lower levels in an organization, supplemented by listening tools and technology. There's some great, interesting tools coming out that, are augmented with AI. So it's a good augmentation. But it all starts with listening. It all starts with gathering data and understanding. I might have hired Robin 6 months ago and he had big ticks. There was a huge match. But 6 months in, he's had some personal situations change. The roles kind of shifted. Now there's gaps starting to emerge. Let's revisit it. Let's talk about discrepancies, gaps. Let's revisit. Let's just keep the communication up. And eventually people unsubscribe from work. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing when someone unsubscribes or when we choose to forcibly unsubscribe someone, because typically that's a result of a mismatch of what the person truly wants or is able to do in a company. The company not understanding that or not being able to provide it, or simply it's just an emergent difference that can't be avoided. And it's two pieces of a puzzle wanting different things, which is completely natural.
Do you, Josh, apply the same hiring model on different types of business cycles? Meaning if I'm a startup, I'm in a growth mode, I'm scaling up. There is this, I want to attract the top talent. I'm willing to pay them. That kind of thing. And if I am in, mid-sized company, I'm rethinking my business model. I want to restructure, divest a little bit. It doesn't matter. So I'm on the downside, if you will, for just a lack of better expression at this point. Is there different models for those, or how do you treat those two business cycles?
Honestly, this is the exciting thing when you get to first principles.
Yeah.
It's applicable to every single situation and every single human, because at the kernel, at the heart of this is the human, and it's not rushing to a solution. It's pausing, doing discovery, and realizing that inherently contexts are shifting, things are dynamic, and it's about understanding and seeking to understand the differences that exist. And when people say, this person is a bad fit, it's like, let's just be clear with our nomenclature and how we talk about this, because the person isn't a bad fit. It's not the person's fault, right? The person is a person. They're a human. Inherently, the majority of people want to do good work and provide value. It's not a problem with the person. It's the fact that there's a mismatch with the business cycle, the state of the company, the context, what they want versus what the human wants at the end of the day. So that applies to businesses at any point in time, and it applies to humans at any point in time in their life. And it's about understanding those two variables and the distance between them, and if it's suitable that these two come together to engage in a relationship.
So let's talk a little bit about the problem solution thing. Throughout your experience, and you've dealt with customers on the outside, what are some of the scenarios that you've seen that, you said, oh my God, this is not working at all, it's a mess, you need to apply the super hire model to get you in the right place? I'm sure you have a few anecdotes here, but the thing is, when we talk, here's what a service is, here's what a product is, we got to bring it down to a problem solution. And that's your opportunity, I guess.
Man, I mean, like, I've worked with I mean, I've been hiring now for like 4 years, right? So I've been through my fair share of mistakes and doing things the traditional way, as we all start off, because that's all that there is right now out there in terms of what gets mentored, what gets taught, what gets repeated, what is institutionalized. And I realized that it just wasn't working in terms of there was always anxiety hiring someone that I was like, I still just don't feel like this is just a roll of the dice. And it's like, surely there's a better way to do it where I have just a better measure of confidence that I'm making the right decision, not just on behalf of the company, but on behalf of the person.
Yep.
Because I've seen it all. I've brought in people that I thought were great, that the company wanted, and that they were like, this is not what I wanted. You told me that I was going to get something else. So that was a mismatch in terms of we know what we were getting, but they didn't know what they were stepping into. So indicative, again, of like the fact that there's a breakdown in a matchmaking exercise. One specific example that I have recently, which is actually a recent learning in the last few months, which really hit home for me, the importance of context at an even deeper level, is at our marketing agency, Tier 11, we were hiring for a creative strategist role, which is like a very highly creative role. And they are paired with a role called a growth strategist in a marketing pod. And both of these people work very closely together. And the dynamics shift between teams quite heavily, depending on those personalities and how they gel together. And what we were basing the hiring on was just the level above that. We weren't looking at the team dynamics at that granular level. We weren't looking at the individual other people that this hire would be interacting with and how those personalities and drivers would mesh. And I know there's a lot of team mapping exercises out there like DISC, and you've got all these Cliftons, and you know, which can be useful to explore, which kind of help with that. But we were hiring at the company level to a job description, which was still very comprehensive, but lacked context indicative of the team and the people in the seat. So we brought someone in and there was 100% mutual alignment. And then when they got in the team, they were like, oh, well, after a month in, I just don't feel like this is lived up to with my expectations, because the relationship with this person isn't what I thought it was going to be. And I thought I would be doing more of this, but now I'm doing less of that. And it kind of smacked us in the face. And we were like, well, this makes so much sense. Like, why didn't we project out how this person, this human, would be interacting with and would fit in the context, even at that granular level of the team? And I can tell you that companies do not do that. Like,
when do you get that information? Because the traditional HR get that information at the exit.
Right. Yeah.
On your way out. And we say, hey, why did you leave? Yeah. I mean, they start asking those questions. But if it's complete, it's over.
Yeah. So this is the inherent challenge here and why it's messy, because we're dealing with humans, and humans are anything but predictable. We're social animals. Like, we're the least predictable thing that exists in a business, right? We change all the time. We get frustrated. We get angry. Everything around our life affects us, and we bring it to work. It's highly dynamic, and it's hard to predict. And that's why hiring is a very hard exercise, because especially now with the way it's broken as we've gone through, and with AI, we're relinquishing such an emotional, human, complex thing to tools that are just not mature enough to do it to that level. And not only that, we don't ask these questions and dive deep enough. So to answer your question, you need to do it at the start of the engagement. It doesn't matter whether you're internal HR or you're an agency servicing a client or you're an external internal recruiter. It doesn't matter. The point being here is that you need to ask the questions. You need to understand the context. You need to spend time in that space. Talk to me about the company. Talk to me about the team. Talk to me about the humans. Do you mind if I go interview some of the humans? Do you mind if I ask you these 50 questions so I can get really deep? Do you mind if I watch some calls? You need to immerse yourself in the happenings of where you're putting this person, so you can truly be in a point where you can sell it and articulate it to candidates and really convey the clarity and the transparency and the reality of the environment and the work product that this person is going to subscribe to. Because when you can do that, you can be super polarizing. You can be confident and say, look, you don't want this job, man, because of these reasons. Trust me. And they're like, well, actually, no, I do want that. Are you sure? Okay, well, let's talk about it. Because on the work drivers, you know, you said you like this. And it opens up this level of discussion that you just can't have traditionally. And the comms that we put out there are very polarizing when it comes to positions. Do not even consider this if you want this. Just don't.
In your opinion, Josh, do we have a talent crisis?
I think we do, definitely, 100%. I think we've got a talent crisis when I start to see companies that are getting seeded and founded that have taglines like game the system and win the game of hiring, and that are pitched to candidates and companies that are perpetuating the use of AI as a solution to what's happening. That's the red flag. And when I see this stuff, I'm like, people are lost and do not know how to get themselves out of this mess. And people are suffering right now. Think about this. People, when they're looking for a job, I know you used the analogy before about, you know, people being in a Starbucks and, you know, and the recruiter being happy and the candidate being happy. I can tell you right now, they're in that Starbucks underneath the table crying because they don't know what the hell is going on. They're not in there happy. They're in the Starbucks.
That's right.
But they're not happy, right? And candidates, it's stressful. Like, people have obligations. The economy isn't great. Things are expensive. Housing is expensive. People are looking for financial stability. They have families to support. And they are finding it incredibly difficult to get conversations with recruiters, let alone get jobs.
That's right.
So it's a mess completely.
Does Superhire consider itself a recruiting agency or HR consulting? Like, where are you in that positioning?
At the moment, we are recruiting talent acquisition. However, it's difficult to constrain it right now because every time we work with clients, they want to extend the arrangement and they want to go further down into the business naturally. Because like we said, this is an entire employee lifecycle problem. It's not just hiring. So you might provide a really excellent hiring experience, getting the right person in, but that changes in 2 months, 6 months, a year, and the work product changes. So you need to have the ability to keep up with that. So right now it's recruiting. I anticipate over time it will extend into being a consultancy with regards to this work as a product method. We're also building technology as well to facilitate all of this. So we've got a product coming out early next year, which is going to help recruiters start to embed and drive more of this discovery approach with their recruiting and their hiring, which I think is a first start. We need recruiters to start thinking through this through the lens of slowing things down, doing more due diligence. So that's the mission and the vision with Superhire and the tool at the moment.
So as we come to an end of our conversation, for those who are listening, how can they reach you? What kind of clients would you be looking for right now, resulting in this podcast? If somebody's interested to reach you, they have a problem, how can you help them? That kind of thing.
Yeah. So right now, if you're a candidate and you're talent, you're a person, you're human, you're not a company, you're a human and you're looking on for a role and resonating with this pain, you can subscribe on our website as a candidate, because we'll eventually be having materials and exercises coming out that can help you do that self-discovery. And eventually we want to morph into like a matchmaking platform to match you with companies that we're doing this level of due diligence with. So subscribe on the website and follow us on LinkedIn. Follow me on LinkedIn. I'm talking a lot about this. If you're a company and you've got headaches in hiring and this resonates with you, then you can also reach out and we can chat about how we can help.
Absolutely. And Josh, I want to thank you for being part of this conversation. I really enjoyed it. I've learned a few things today.
That's good.
Your business model is very unique and the approach is very unique. I really enjoyed the talent density discussion. That was great. You know, I've heard about it before, but this is the first time I hear it in an application point of view and how you're applying it. There's a lot of benefit in people listening into this conversation who are in, you know, the startup mode, founders. They're trying to build high density teams or high density talents around them as they scale up the business. This is very interesting to them as well. And the listeners to this podcast are primarily entrepreneurs and startups. So you may see a few good things coming out of it. I really appreciate your time with me, Josh. Any last comments?
I'd say the last comment is, based on the audience, you know, startups, scale-ups, getting hiring right early on is the most important, most critical thing you can do for the success of your company. Because it just, they make such a huge difference getting it right as early as possible, as opposed to it being diluted in a larger, more enterprise company or agency. If you do it early on, exponentially has. So it's something that every founder and every owner should be very, very focused on, is bringing on the right talent into their company.
Absolutely. So thank you, Josh, one more time. I appreciate your time with me today on recording episode 130 of the Localization Fireside Chat. I really appreciate the listeners to sticking around and listening in to our discussion with me and Josh. Hopefully you got a few gems out of this conversation. You've taken some notes. If you need to reach out to Josh, you can find him on LinkedIn. You can ask me for an introduction personally. I'll introduce you to Josh. He's connected to me on LinkedIn. If you're interested in talking to Josh, just hit me up on LinkedIn and I'll do an introduction for you. Thanks so much for the listeners. I really appreciate it for liking, commenting, and sharing on this content. And I'll see you at the next episode. Josh, stick around for a second.